on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome along to 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio, the show where we ran up all of your latest local sports news and best community stories from around the county. Well, Cambridge United are through to the next round of the EFL Trophy. Well, we knew that already, but last night they topped the Southern Group H following a 3-1 victory over Peterborough United on penalties. Ben Warman, called for back from his loan from St Neots Town, scored his first professional goal as the 90 minutes finished 1-1. We'll hear from him and head coach Mark Bonnet this hour. It was announced recently that the 2020-21 rugby season from tiers 3 and below has been cancelled. That includes Cambridge Rugby Club from the National League 1, which is tier 3, and a number of our other local sides as well. Will Shelford play in Tier 6 in the London 1 North, and we'll be joined by their Director of Rugby, Will Cottrell, to discuss the decision and what it means financially, whether we'll see a different form of rugby this season also. And we've also got two great community stories for you. Cambridge City's charity partner this year is Cambridge City Food Bank, and we're joined by Director from the Football Club, Chris Cox, and Cambridge City Food Bank CEO, Margaret Sainer, to discuss their partnership and how you can help as, of course, we enter a second national lockdown. And we'll also be chatting to Tanya and Jamie of Football Shirts FC, an organisation raising money for two fantastic charities through their love for football and football shirts. Find out more later on in the show. Now, if you want to get in touch, you can do. We're not in the studio this week, so the best place to do so is on social media at 105 Sport, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. My name is Ollie Slatt. Let's start with the U's then this afternoon and a very impressive performance last night. That to a little bit of a storm at times in the first half, but came out second half against Peterborough in the EFL Trophy and were very strong indeed. It was Posh, though, who took the lead in the 48th minute through Flynn Clark, and Ben Warman, as I said, recalled from his loan from St Neots Town, allowing him to play for the U's in the squad, came on and scored with 4 minutes to go to make it 1-1. Then he went to penalties. The penalty scorers for the U's was Harrison Dunk, Tom Knowles and Andy Dallas, but Callum Burton saved 3 spot kicks to help United claim top spot and secure a home tie in the next round, the last 32. Let's hear from head coach Mark Bonner. He was a happy man.
Well, Mark, 1-1. I suppose if we were stood here and you hadn't got to 1-1, you'd be wondering how on earth that had happened, because you peppered the Posh goal at times in that second half.
He did, and the goalie had a worldie, didn't he? He made some great saves. A combination of that and sometimes our finishing. But, I really enjoyed the urgency and the tempo and intensity we played with second half when we fell behind to chase the game. And it shows the mentality that we're building of a group of players that hate losing and want to win games and want to get in games. And our boys were desperate to chase a winner at 1-1, but we knew that would get us top spot. So we were trying to hold them on a leash a little bit, and we didn't want to get counter-attacked and concede a late goal that would have seen us second place. So top spot was what we were aiming for tonight. We're really pleased with the effort and endeavour. A lot of the players that have played their first game for a while, and overall, yeah, I think a really really positive, really competitive game for us.
And to knock out a League One side in Burton and to top the table with another League One side, it shows how well you're doing this season, you know, to top the table.
Yeah, of course. We wanted to progress. We wanted to win the group for the home tie in the next round. I mean, what you see in this competition is you do see people make changes to their team. So obviously we know that we've changed the team heavily tonight, and as have they. But you're going to get a competitive game regardless, because there's players there that are playing at the league above, and our players are aspiring to get to that level. But ultimately our players are trying to get themselves fit and in our team at the moment. And they've done themselves proud tonight, so we're pleased with the effort and the work ethic. It's sometimes hard when you make so many changes, and also when you haven't played so much football. Andy Dallas hasn't played in 90 minutes for God knows how long. Knowlesy, those boys that haven't played so much, it's really encouraging for them tonight.
And I bet Andy Dallas is in there wondering how on earth he's not scored. He's clipped the post, he's had some saves against him, some blocks on the line as well. He's done everything but find the back of the net, but not through his own fault.
Yeah, he worked his socks off and got himself in some good opportunities. Keeper's made one or two good saves against him. But again, I think from an attacking point of view, we played with a real urgency in the second half. First half was very much about defensive shape and trying to counter-attack, and we did that okay at times. Second half, we managed to dominate and get on top of the game. We were always vulnerable maybe to a counter-attack from them, but our sustained attacks and relentless pressure in the second half was outstanding.
They felt a bit of controversy in your goal. They felt someone was on the line blocking a defender from clearing the shot from Ben Warman. What was your take on it?
Yeah, I'd probably agree. But never mind. We're delighted to have got the goal. We deserved it. We deserved something from the game. He's in an offside position. Whether or not he's interfering with play, God knows. I don't know the offside rule anymore, so I'm not sure. But the ref's obviously made his decision. And to be honest, we don't care. We're delighted to top the group.
and a lovely moment for a youngster as well, who of course woke up as a St Neots player. You recalled him, and he's got a goal.
Yeah, fair play. The EFL changed the rules actually today, so they've allowed us to call players back. It was too late actually. That to what we wanted to waive the 28 days for Lewis Simper to come back and play tonight, but that didn't come through in time. So to get Ben and Joe back was important. We wanted to get them on the pitch. Joe's debut, Ben's first goal, 5 academy boys on the pitch by the end of the game. Really encouraging night for all of those boys, and for someone like Joe, who's been here since he was 8 years old and worked his socks off to get his opportunity into the team, it's a good first step for them, and hopefully they can continue developing.
And they'll be able to go back to their respective loans as and when that level of football opens up again without any hiccups or anything.
They will now, yeah. So we're really pleased because the news came through today that the EFL have changed the guidelines and the guidance as we sort of hoped they would. So credit to them for doing that. It maybe happened a little bit too late in some respects for one or two others, but in the main, the right solution's been found there. So that's encouraging for everybody.
And then to finish, the penalty shootout. I mean, breeze to a victory in that, and your keeper saving 3 of them. What a night for him.
3 well-executed penalties from us and 3 brilliantly saved ones from him. Yeah, good saves. Very good. You rely on your goalkeeper in those moments. They become the match winners, and he was our one tonight.
Mark, we spoke in previous weeks about your players being tested against better opposition. How nice was it tonight to give some of those other players who haven't had as many minutes as they'd have liked this season against better opposition again tonight?
Yeah, I mean, an opposition at the league above, but players that haven't played so much for them. Players that haven't played so much for us, so it's less about the level. It was always going to be a decent competitive game. 2 groups of players that were of a level against each other, so I didn't really see it as a difference in level so much in that sense. Had they played their first team, you'd be definitely talking about that. But for us, it was an important game for a lot of those players to play. One, to rest some of the players that have played so much, but also we've got a lot of players injured at the moment. Paul Mullin, Paul Digby, Joe Ironside, Luke Hannon, Jack Iredale, Wes Houlihan, all unavailable tonight through injury. So this game will be good for those boys should they be needed to go again on Saturday. And we'll see where we are later in the week with if any of those boys are available.
Yeah, I was going to say, how important are those minutes in the legs for some of those players tonight in case they're going to be called upon in the next couple of weeks?
It's massive because not only in the next couple of weeks, but in the next sort of month or so, when the team's being getting the results that we are, some of them have found it hard and got frustrated by a lack of opportunities. But that's the sort of sign of where we are at the moment. So they just need to be game ready. And the fact that Nibsy's played a 90 and a 70, Idris has played 2 games in quick succession, that will really help them boys as we go forward.
So an upbeat Mark Bonner there, although he mentioned injuries. Let's hear a bit more about them then, because it looks like the next few days are going to be crucial to finding out whether the youth can get a really strong side out for the match against Barrow on Saturday. Let's hear what he had to say about a long list of injuries.
Wes has been tight in his groin. Jack Iredale was brought off on Saturday with a tight quad. Luke Hannon got through the game but a tight groin on Saturday. Paul Digby, a facial injury. Paul Mullin, obviously, his ankle injury. And Joe Ironside, his chest injury. So all of those have just been either known or just crept up in terms of the last game. But it's no shock that with the game load that we've had at the moment and how hard our team work and the intensity we work at, that we're fatiguing and we're now at game, this is game 8 in 30 days or 27 days. By the weekend it'll be 9 in a month. There's no surprise it's going to take its toll on some, and we have to see if we can get one or two of those back for the weekend. But at the moment it doesn't look too positive on a few of those for this week.
Yes, yeah, so not good news for Mark there. We'll keep updated how that injury list develops over the next few days and update you on the Cambridgeshire Football Show, which is on air Saturday at 1 o'clock here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Let's hear from the man of the moment, Ben Warman, then recalled from St Neots Town after his month, for a month, effectively his loan has been frozen. He will go back to St Neots if they can return to football in December. Of course, an absolute whirlwind few hours for him. Let's hear from him. He spoke to the media after the game.
So it's been quite a busy 24 hours, really, getting called back in.
Yeah, I know. It was a bit of a weird one, really. Obviously, I got told that I'll be available for the squad tonight after spending a bit of time at St Neots. But yeah, I was just glad to get on and then get the goal. And obviously we got the win, which was good in the end as well.
When did you get told you'd be back?
So I got told yesterday, because I had like a 28-day recall anyway. So I think they managed to sort that out yesterday and got told I'll be on a bench for tonight's game. So yeah, it all happened a bit quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is just like typical football, really. It's always the same.
But then to come on again and then to get the goal. I mean,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
Even sweeter.
Yeah, obviously last week I was at St Neots and on loan there, obviously thinking I'll be there for the rest of the month and stuff. And like, obviously was what's been going on with the new lockdown and stuff. Got the opportunity tonight and obviously, yeah, got a goal, which was nice. And yeah, we got the win, like I said.
How did it feel to get your first professional goal?
Yeah, nah. It just snuck in, really. It weren't the cleanest of strikes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It all count. But yeah, I was buzzing to get the goal, really. It's something I've been working towards for a long time now. It's good to see that it's finally paid off when I've got the chance. So, yeah.
Parents and family?
Yeah, so yeah, they've obviously been watching me at my time at St Neots, and they're big fans of the club anyway, so they would have been watching tonight. But nah, yeah.
They've never been on the phone yet?
Oh, nah. I've had a few messages, yeah, a few messages of like congratulations from them and that. So I'm sure they'll be happy.
But I mean, just that final point for me, so I guess it's a weird one because you're probably facing up to 28 days with no football whatsoever.
I know, that was the thing. It was sort of like, after having a decent spell on loan at St Neots, it was a bit of a kick in the teeth, really, knowing that I might not be playing football for however long, like 4 weeks, and it could have been a bit longer. But yeah, it all happened so quick. And yeah, to get some minutes tonight and obviously be back at Cambridge, I think they've sorted out the rules now anyway. So like the loan freezes, so I can probably go back there anyway. But yeah, to get the opportunity tonight and score, yeah, it was a good feeling.
And how much sweeter does it make it, though, against Peterborough?
Oh, massive. Massive. Like, everyone knows, like, supporting this club, that these games are massive, even if there aren't fans here. So, yeah, it's good to get one over them.
What did you make of the 90 minutes, Ben, before you came on and then when you came on?
Yeah, I thought, to be fair to them, I think they played well. They kept the ball well and they play expansive football. So I think we struggled to get into the game a little bit. But second half, I thought we come out a lot stronger, created a lot of opportunities, and we deserved a goal, if not another one in the end. So yeah, it was a decent performance from us overall, I think.
And what were your instructions when Mark sent you on? What did he say?
Just to get on the ball as much as I can, be lively, obviously do my defensive work as well, and just impact the game. So I knew what to do, really.
Is it weird taking a penalty shootout with no fans whatsoever?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I wanted to take the penalty. I think I was next if they had scored, So yeah, there weren't really much pressure on it, to be fair. But yeah, Cal's done brilliant with three of the saves that he's made. And yeah, we've got the win, which is good.
And as far as you're concerned, Ben, before you, assuming you head back to St Neots in a month or so time, is it very much just a case of trying to impress, trying to get in the side? Because as players, you're well aware of the number of injuries the club has at the minute.
Yeah, exactly, 100%. Like, I just want to try and impress whenever I get given the opportunity. And obviously I've got the goal tonight, which is good, so any opportunities that are thrown at me in the next coming weeks or so, I'll try and take them as well as I can. So yeah, it'll be interesting to try and battle for a place in the team now.
And just lastly, Ben, it seems a really nice group to be a part of for yourself, because there's so many players: Harry Darling, Leon Davies, Joe Nearly came on as well, who you've grown up with, and now you're in the same side together as well.
Yeah, exactly. We spent a lot of time at the youth team with them lads, and obviously Mark was the manager at that time as well. So yeah, to see like us all out there now is good, and sort of long may it continue, and us try and get more appearances under our belt, and hopefully we can do well for the club going forwards.
So the Ewes have guaranteed a home tie now in the last 32 of the EFL Trophy. We're talking rugby next. Cambridge 105
Radio. On Cambridge 105 Radio.
You're welcome back to the 105 Sports Special. Let's turn our attention to rugby now. And as I mentioned earlier on, the league season from Tier 3 and below has been cancelled. That affects, of course, Cambridge, Shelford, all of our local sides. Now, of course, national lockdown as well means that from until Wednesday, the 2nd of December, all team sports have been suspended. That includes age grade rugby, adult rugby activities as well, below, of course, the Championship and Premier 15s. So that means they've returned to Stage A on the return to community rugby roadmap as well. So no competitive or formal rugby activities can be undertaken until at least Wednesday, the 2nd of December. Here joining me now to talk about that is Will Cottrell from Shelford Rugby Club. Thanks very much for coming on the show, Will.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's deal with the league issue first of all, the news on the 1st of November. Obviously, I imagine that must have been severely disappointing for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've all been living in hope that we might have been able to play some form of league rugby in the new year. We never thought we'd have a full league, but we thought we might come close to it and have some kind of viable league that would allow for promotion and relegation. But that obviously wasn't going to be the case. Disappointing for Shelford, because we're putting a lot of energy into getting promoted back into the national leagues. And this season we'd earmarked a promotional season, but we're just going to have to take that on the chin and hope that we get a chance at that next year.
Let's hope so. How does this financially affect the club, though, Will? Because I'm sure that'll be on your mind as well.
Yeah, look, home games do bring in a big chunk of money to the club, but they also cost a chunk of money to put the games on. So financially, the club is in a reasonable position. We haven't got the same income coming in, but we also haven't got the same expenses going out. And we're very lucky to have a good financial manager who's keeping check on things. So, yeah, we're not seeing the income, but we're not seeing the expenses. We can certainly survive through this season and obviously hope that we get a full season next year for 2021-22.
Yeah, your local counterparts in Richie Williams, Cambridge Director of Rugby, and James Shanahan, of course, Cambridge University as well, both felt that the decision from the RFU could have been made maybe slightly earlier. I guess maybe from the point of view that had it been made earlier, there could have been plans to really focus, maybe get some potential rugby in before Christmas. But now it seems with Christmas and another lockdown, it seems like it won't be for another couple of months. What's your thoughts on it?
I think definitely with the cancellation of the league, as we got closer to Christmas, it became more and more obvious that we weren't going to be able to have a viable league that would allow for fair promotion and relegation. So I think that announcement could have come out earlier, and potentially the RFU could have been working towards an adapted format of the game that we could start soon after Christmas and the new year. And I feel that we've sort of been a bit behind or the RFU have been a bit behind in getting that organised. There is rumours and grumblings out there that they're very close to having an approved version of the game ready to roll out in the new year. But, they haven't been acting as quickly as a lot of clubs would have liked, I don't think, in this build-up to Christmas.
Yeah, like you said, the RFU, there's sort of been suggestions, isn't there? There's a regionalised league or cup competition maybe on the horizon. Do you like that idea?
I think it's the safest idea. And I think it's probably the most sensible idea as well. If you look at us, for example, we our league with 14 teams had already been split into two conferences of seven teams based on locality. And now they're looking at scrapping that idea and putting us in a cluster of six clubs based on even closer locality. So you'd be looking at sides like Norwich and North Walsham in Norfolk, for example, us in Cambridgeshire, Sudbury in Suffolk. So I think that kind of approach is the right way to go from a player welfare point of view, and keeping things in close areas where hopefully the spread of COVID is quite similar, particularly if they go back to the tiered lockdown system.
Yeah, is that a frustration for you in that before, obviously, all this lockdown and this season, you were in the London One North, which was relatively local in itself. Then you were split again into two even more localised conferences. Is that a frustration that you weren't able to play that localised league and you're potentially going to be put into another one?
I'll be completely honest. My first reaction was when they said he's cancelled, I was like, you know, it's a blanket approach to the whole of English rugby, which I felt was a bit unfair because, exactly like you said, we are and our fellow clubs in our league are in areas where the spread of the virus is quite low, and potentially we could have addressed different areas separately to see if it was possible for rugby fixtures to start rather than just going, right, that's it for everybody across the country. But then on reflection, I could see the logistical challenges of that and then also the ramifications it would cause in different areas. You're only going to look at the general lockdown and how, you know, the tiered system wasn't very well received in the north, where they were getting stricter lockdown rules and regulations than we were in the south. So it probably would have caused more trouble than good, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed that competition or a competition of sorts can be up and running post-Christmas. With regards to the rules and regulations of that competition, are you expecting it to be sort of the Premier 15's women's style as opposed to the ready to rugby?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, initially ready for rugby until we get, back to training, and then hopefully moving to full squad training. The women's adapted version of the game, I think, will be something that the RFU are looking to roll out in the lower leagues. So, you know, taking the maul out of the game, potentially taking the scrum or the competitive scrum out of the game, would be the two main areas of change, and potentially reducing the length of the match from not 80 minutes to 70 or even 60 minutes to make it safer.
Let's reduce our focus from long-term to more short-term matters in the next month's lockdown, Will. As we know, kids are not being stopped from going to school. Do you feel that's potentially one of the areas that could be changed, allowing kids to play rugby at school to try and keep the game going a bit more? Because at the minute, there is a complete, as you said, blanket ban on rugby for this next month.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we are trying to reduce the spread of the illness in the schools as well. And, potentially playing a higher risk sport like rugby could increase the chances of the spread within the schools. And schools don't want the virus to spread through the schools. So I can understand why everyone's being a bit wary of introducing activities that are higher risk. You know, it's a lot safer to play some of the other sports in school. And I've recently spoken to a couple of schools because, you know, we go out and deliver rugby programs in a lot of the local schools. And, in the new year, we're talking about coming in and delivering the ready for rugby and touch rugby and just keeping the kids engaged with some format of rugby will probably be the best outcome. And it might not be that we'll get to do any full contact rugby for them, but we'll be able to keep rugby in their minds and keep them playing touch rugby and ready for rugby, which are very enjoyable games, but obviously not the ultimate game that we all enjoy playing with the contact involved.
Absolutely. Do you feel if though the youngsters amongst the community and the county are not able to play any sorts of rugby, in fact, over the next month or so, that could present dangers potentially for the game in the future moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if we look at Shelford as a sample club, we've actually had more junior sign on this season than we've ever had before. Now, I think that is because schools aren't offering it. So it's like, well, if we want to get some kind of rugby training and some kind of rugby gameplay, it's going to be through a club. So it's benefited us in that way. And we've been able to deliver COVID-friendly rugby sessions. We've had a couple of ready for rugby tournaments. We had one which was internal, and we've had one against Cambridge, who are obviously our close neighbours, and they've both been very successful. The kids have really enjoyed it. So I think, you know, this season we would be okay. There's enough positive energy and there's enough resilience out there for the kids to keep loving rugby, to keep playing rugby, even if it is only the touch version. I would hate to think what happened if it started to trickle into next season as well. I think, you know, that would be the big issue. I think we'll get away with it for one season at the worst. But if it trickled into next season, I think we'd see a serious decline in playing numbers across the board.
Mm, that's something absolutely we don't want at all. With regards to yourself and the first team squad, how do you go about, or how are you going about keeping the players active physically and, of course, mentally as well over the next month?
Yeah, look, I think we've worked hard on bringing a first 15/second 15 squad together over the summer. We've got a lot of young players in the squad. One of the things we focused on at the outset was setting some longer term goals. So some 3 to 5 year goals about getting promoted back into the national leagues. One of the reasons for that was that we can then look at this sort of blip of a season in perspective across, you know, the other 3 or 4 seasons that we're aiming to get promotions. And there's not one player in the squad at the moment who wouldn't be able to see out the next three or four years due to their age. It would just be injury that was the issue. So this squad that we've worked hard on pulling together should be the driving force of getting Shelford back into the national league. So we've set those goals. We're now working on lifting our standards physically, technically, tactically, mentally, so that we're actually improving ourselves as players improving the team play, improving the squad culture, so that we are able to gain promotion and then not only gain it, but obviously sustain playing in higher leagues. So again, we're making the most of a bad situation. And at this stage, everybody is buoyant. The virtual training that we do through lockdown is enjoyable. The banter amongst the squad is fun. And it will be okay. Like I say, it will roll through into the new year, but the challenge will be in the new year, keeping people engaged if we're given the red light on rugby for the season. The element of competition is something that's really important too, particularly the first 15, second 15 players, because they're there to compete, they're there to win, they want promotion. And it's, you know, that's a bigger focus for that squad than it is, say, for the 3-4-5 squadron who are doing it to keep fit, to be social with other players.
Well, hopefully that hunger and drive to earn promotion for those lower sides, that love for the sport, can drag them through the next month, and rugby will not be too far away. Will, thank you very much for joining us, and all the best over the next month.
Thank you very much for having me, and hopefully we'll have some good news on the other side of Christmas.
Hopefully so. Cheers, Will.
Bye.
On Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yeah, welcome back to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Let's turn to our community stories now and start with Cambridge City, as their charity partner this year was Cambridge City Food Bank. I'm delighted to say I'm joined now by director from the football club, Chris Cox, and Margaret Sainer, the CEO of Cambridge City Food Bank. Thank you very much for coming on, guys.
Yeah, good to see you, Ollie.
Firstly, let's start with yourself, Margaret. For those who aren't aware, just to tell us a bit more about Cambridge City Food Bank.
So we started about 10 years ago, and our remit is to provide help for people who need food or other sort of support within about 25-mile radius of Cambridge. So we work with a group of about 140, 150 partner agencies who refer people who need help with food. So it's 3 days emergency food. And because we work with partner agencies, we know that everybody who comes in is being, somebody's talked to them, somebody's found out what's going on, and is hopefully offering them a bit of support rather than just 3 days food, which is, you know, solves the immediate problem, but doesn't really help in the longer term. And that's actually one of the big things about our model, which is part of the Trussell Trust, that people come into us are getting proper support from somebody who's professionally trained, knows how to deal with people's problems, and can point them to the right help to get them back on their feet. Obviously, at the moment, it's a bit harder because there are so many people who are finding themselves in need of food banks that would normally be doing okay. And some of the crises are not just going to last for a few days, a few weeks. They're going to go on until we see some improvement in the whole situation with the virus and the economy.
So there's no doubt you've found that proper support, as you said, is even more important in these times currently.
Yeah, because just to say to people, well, here's 3 days food, but they're not able to, they don't know where to go to access more support. And that's actually quite a big problem at the moment, because a lot of people who are used to being, everything's going fine, they don't know where these sort of sources of support are. They've never even had to think about it, and now they're finding themselves in that situation, and they don't even know where to begin.
And before we come on to the partnership between yourselves and Cambridge City, Margaret, have you seen a change in perhaps, or did you see a change, a real big change in the circumstances when you went into lockdown last time, and therefore do you expect one this time? But of course, we're a week in already. Do you expect one this time?
Well, back in March, April, we saw a huge increase in the number of people coming in. We're talking about, you know, it's like a 70% increase in the number of people accessing the food bank. That quietened off quite a lot in the summer as the local community support groups really got going, and people were able to find other sources of food and help. But we're now seeing the numbers going back up again. And I think now we're in the next lockdown. It's winter, people, you know, they're colder, they're spending more of the money they've got on their heating. They've burnt through their savings, and I think it's going to get worse. And of course, who knows what's going to happen over the next few months with the continuation of the pandemic, and then of course, Brexit hitting us next year.
Yeah, it sounds like everyone needs all the help they can get, and that help has partly come in the direction of Cambridge City Football Club. Chris, why did you feel it was important, I guess, as choosing Cambridge City Food Bank as your charity partner and working with them?
So first of all, we kind of a few years back, we decided on having a charity partner. It was a link between the club and the Supporters Trust. An idea came up about what we could do to help. Last year, we teamed up with Cambridgeshire, Peterborough and South Lincolnshire Mind, the mental health charity. We did some fantastic work with them. Probably the highlight was when we played in Amber for the one day. Some City fans couldn't tolerate. But we played in yellow shirts for the day, and they were all auctioned off. I think we raised a couple of £1,000 in the end for the charity on that day alone. When it came to making a decision this year, we put the question out to the fans to see who they wanted to choose as their charity partner. And one of the big charities that came back was the food bank. With what was happening with lockdown and like you've sort of just touched upon, more and more people having to rely on food banks for food and other support. It was an easy decision to team up.
And you put the decision out to the fans in the first place. Have you had a good response from fans to help and get involved?
Yeah, it's been absolutely amazing. So we have collection crates at our men's and ladies first team games. And I think we've donated about 20 crates in all, either directly to the charity or what we tend to do, because it's a bit easier, is use one of the local collection points at Tesco's, for example, to drop the stuff off there. It's gained quite a lot of interest as well. We had BT Sport at one of our games, and they featured it as part of their live broadcast as well. So that was all quite exciting for the club as well, and helps raise the profile of the charity.
And like I said a bit before, really, why do you feel it's really vitally important to help out? Because as a football club, just naturally providing entertainment for your supporters and an escapism, if you like, for fans, that is giving back to the community in a sense already. Why do you feel it's important then to go the extra mile and help out with a charity partner?
I think quite simple. It's a moral responsibility as part for the club. Clubs are part of the community. You can see the sort of outcries when clubs sort of fold and things like that. And yeah, okay, you could say that, well, were they being supported in the first thing? Were they being run within their means? That's probably a discussion for another day. But the key thing is we've always valued ourselves as part of the community. What better thing to do than team up with a local charity that helps local people? It seems that it was a no-brainer.
Margaret, a similar question to you, really. How have you felt the benefit of Cambridge City Football Club? And I guess partnerships like that over the year, how are they, or why are they so important to yourselves?
Well, I think it's good to be working with other people. As Chris, it's working with other groups within the community. It's giving an opportunity for people within the community who want to help. They're saying, well, it's great. We've got the football. We can go along and support that, and at the same time, we can perhaps help some other people who are, really struggling at the moment. And I think it just raises awareness with people that food is a basic need, and it's something that everybody wants to just be able to just help a little bit. There was all the thing the other week about the free school meals, and I think that really touched a lot of people. The feeling that there might be children going hungry, and I think with the football club in Cambridge City, they've been able to say, well, actually, we can do a little bit just to remind our fans, our supporters, that perhaps as part of their ordinary football club supporting, they can actually help somebody else as well, and that's been really good. And to know that we've actually got that link. It's a pity, obviously, with the lockdown that perhaps we can't maybe be as much involved as perhaps another year, but you know, we can, I'm sure we can sort of look and see how that goes over the next few months.
Yeah, you touched on Marcus Rashford's campaign there, Margaret, and one of the elements with that which is so amazing was how it brought communities together up and down the country from top to bottom. Do you feel that lockdown, the hard times we've experienced through the COVID pandemic, has really brought people together? There has been a silver lining of people coming together and working as community.
I think that's certainly one of the things that we've seen with our connections with some of the local community hubs, and you know, just within our own, you know, my own area, you know, you see people, everybody wants to help when there's a crisis. It's almost like the sort of the old Blitz mentality that the grandparents used to talk about. everybody wants to help out.
Exactly, yeah. And why shouldn't we? If people are listening, Margaret, and they want to help, people are listening to this on the radio and they get home in their cars and they think, right, that's brilliant, Cambridge City are doing a fantastic job, so are yourselves, but how can I as an individual help? What would be the best advice you can give?
So, excuse me, the best place to look at is actually on our website, cambridgecityfoodbank.org.uk, which will have a list on the place. You can go there and look for how do you give help, and there's a list on there of the things that we're particularly, the food items we're particularly short of at the moment, also how people can, you know, maybe donate some funds which we can then use to always one of the problems with food banks, you end up with too much pasta and no pasta sauce. So sometimes we have to buy in a few, we'd have to buy in some food as well, just to make sure that people get in their 3 days package. They don't want just a big bag of pasta. They want cereal, and they want some meat and some vegetables, and you know, some pudding and chocolate for the kids and all that sort of stuff. So there's usually a few things we have to buy in as well. And so if people want to give money, we can do something with that as well.
Fantastic.
It's on our website, which has the latest list.
Fantastic. And Chris, from your point of view, I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, but the collection point at the ground is presumably closed at the minute due to the COVID restrictions. But how are Cambridge City and fans will be looking to just continue this progress and this partnership moving forward?
Yeah, unfortunately, like you say, we're the collection point was operating on match days, so we've had to kind of, we've pulled that for the time being. One of the big things that I noticed, I'm as you know from sort of coming to games, I'm always sort of at the turnstiles and sort of loitering around that area to do little bits and pieces. But I don't know, the first time we did it, it was the clearly people had just gone into the cupboard, they'd found something that they're probably not going to eat, and brought it along. And actually, as time went on, you could see people were turning up with shopping bags, and people hadn't just raided the cupboards as an afterthought and a last minute thing to come and support the charity. They'd actually purposely gone to the shops on the way to do as much as they can. And I'm not saying that's just testament to our fans. I think fans up and down the country, you can see, are getting involved in initiatives like this. And like Margaret said, like local communities are really rallying together. And I think hopefully it's one of the positive things that will come out of what we've all had to experience this year. I think we'd probably rather not have experienced it, but if we can all come out of better communities and better society, then that's only a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's very true.
And Margaret, just lastly, it's an interesting point Chris makes about, I guess, the subconscious and conscious act of giving to the food bank, going to the back of the cupboard and having a look, but also then maybe perceptions changing perhaps over time. Do you see that changing of people when they're out in the shops going, well, actually, rather than go home and just see what's in my cupboard, I'll get something now that could be even more useful at the shops? I guess that's just a change that will hopefully naturally happen over time.
Yeah, it's amazing actually how generous people are. We're coming up to the time when we do our national collection in Tesco's, and we will see people coming along with a trolley load, taking out one bag and saying the rest is for you. So, you know, people are incredibly generous, and you know, we are grateful for all the stuff that comes in. Obviously, you know, there are times where perhaps the stuff in the back of the cupboard is interesting. But we can usually find something to do with pretty well everything that we get in. And but obviously, yeah, the fact that people are prepared are thinking, well, actually, you know, I can just go to the shop and I can buy a few you know, nice things to give to people. They say it's better to give than to receive sometimes.
Yeah, quite right. And I agree with both of you. We have definitely seen that shine through during these times. Margaret, Chris, thank you very much for joining me, and stay safe during lockdown as well.
And you, take care.
Yeah, Chris Cox from Cambridge City Football Club and Margaret Sainer, the CEO of Cambridge City Food Bank there. Let's move on. And I'm delighted to say now I'm joined by Tanya and Jamie from Football Shirts FC, an organisation looking to raise money for two fantastic charities. They join me now. Thanks very much for coming on the show, guys.
Thank you very much.
Firstly, guys, if you don't mind, just explain what Football Shirts FC is.
So Football Shirts for Charity started because Jamie and I are both massive football fanatics and have got lots of experiences of football drawing people together for different reasons, and have both been affected by cancer in people close to us. And we saw an opportunity to do something different. So we started Football Shirts for Charity for the opportunity for people to buy a pre-loved shirt and get involved in many of the different events we run over the year in order to raise money for the Bobby Moore Fund for Cancer Research and a children's hospice run by Sebastian's Action Trust, who do phenomenal work.
Yeah, you mentioned that you've both been affected by people who have had cancer. Is that the sort of inspiration behind setting up the charity?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been looking after a young man who has autism, and he goes to this respite care home, which is for terminally ill children. So that was a big sort of pull as well. But yeah, the fact that we've both had people very close to us that have been affected by cancer was the sort of deciding factor between pursuing our work for these two charities.
How nice is it to sort of combine the two elements of doing good and also your love for football, a sport that you clearly are very passionate about?
That's exactly what sparked us into wanting to make this vision a reality, to help people, especially at this time when obviously in lockdown people can't get to matches, etc. So we know that when you look at a shirt, it evokes many special memories and emotions. So our strapline is every shirt has a story, and we truly believe that shirts hold memories. And by discussing your team and the match that you went to with that shirt, for example, it can bring quite a lot of happiness and also help future generations get involved in both local clubs and national clubs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the two charities is the Sebastian's Action Trust and the Bobby Moore Fund. Just give us a bit more background info on those charities for those who don't know, and why you chose them as the two.
So the Bobby Moore Fund is particularly aimed at researching bowel cancer, and bowel cancer unfortunately affects many people, of which 45 still die every day, which is too many in our books. And we've both had people, as we said, very closely affected, and you can read more about our stories on our website at footballshirtsfc.co.uk. But we also know that it is preventable in terms of the things that you can do. So good diet, lots of exercise, less alcohol, and looking out for the symptoms, which sometimes can seem quite embarrassing, but don't necessarily mean that you've got cancer. But by knowing what they are and getting checked out early, there's a massive improvement in survival rate. And we want to help kind of blow out the myths of bowel cancer and get the research going on so the treatments can continue and that we've got many more survivors.
And Sebastian's Action Trust is an incredible place. The story behind that is just unbelievable, really. A young boy, Sebastian, was 7-8 years old and was dying of cancer. And he decided that his last wish, if you like, was to try and raise as much money as he possibly could to build a care home for children that were in a similar position to him in the future. Had somewhere to go with their families for sort of respite holidays, if you like. And of course, he never saw that come to fruition. But post his sad death, his family made that their mission. And built this absolutely incredible home where families that are often in real turmoil, very difficult situations, can go and have something of a normal holiday break, respite opportunity in this incredible home in North Hampshire.
Yeah, two amazing charities by the sounds of things. How can people get involved if they want to?
There's two main ways you can get involved, and the one at the moment that's coming up is Football Shirt Friday, and we also have a charity run that goes alongside that. So if you have a football shirt, you can pop that on, run any distance, anytime, anywhere, and log your entry with us, and you get a unique medal to celebrate your achievement, and you can also nominate your football team to score on our leaderboards. And we've currently got Peterborough featuring, but nothing from Cambridge or surrounding areas, so we'd absolutely love for any other clubs in your area. So listeners, come on, you can do this. If you haven't got a shirt, that's not a problem at all. You can still nominate a team to run for and take part anyway, and it's all about football and fitness and making sure that we keep the fun going on in times when it's tough. If you don't want to do a run, you can also take part in Football Shirt Friday, and more details are on our website how to do that, and there's a donate page which goes straight through to Just Giving for Bobby Moore Fund as well.
And just on the concept of the run, the football league, we've got Football Shirts for Charity League table or leaderboard. We think that's a really exciting concept, in that it's not about the top four divisions, it's about literally any team at any level. So we've got a couple of non-Notts County, Baldmere, St Michael's are on there. It could be a local Sunday side. It could be a local under-9s team, you know, that could sit above Liverpool in the league. So if you go on the website and see that league table, we think that's a really, really exciting concept of part of what we're doing to try and really encourage the entire football community to get on board, if you like. So, yeah, hopefully people really, really buy into that in the local area.
Yeah, just looking at the league table now, no, as you said, no Cambridge teams, unfortunately, no Cambridge United. Exeter City lead the way at the minute on 12 points. Peterborough United there as well. We have to say that quite quietly in these parts, I think. but maybe the Cambridge fans, the listeners, will be competitive, and that would have riled them to get involved. Hopefully so anyway. And of course, this is a virtual run as well. So people in these COVID lockdown times can very much do this from home.
Absolutely. It's very time specific, if you like, in that anybody can do it anytime, anywhere, any distance. There's, you know, no pressure. It could be a run up and down the road, a run around the garden, or it could be a marathon. You know, we're trying to make it as inclusive as possible. So young children, experienced marathon runners, anybody, anything, anytime, anywhere. And the completely other side of what we're doing is obviously football shirts. So we're about trying to sell pre-loved retro vintage football shirts. There are lots currently on our website, but one thing we're really asking for help with is for people to donate football shirts that perhaps are, you know, taking up space in their wardrobe that they just don't need or want anymore. And that's, again, completely all-encompassing, in that we'd really like non-league clubs to get involved in that as well. We want to be able to sell football shirts on the website right across the football pyramid. We've got a few non-league clubs that are supporting us with that. Good example is Farnham Town in Surrey. They've got a container in their ground, and it's full of old football shirts, you know, the last sort of 10, 12 seasons worth of shirts in kit bags that have sat there and are doing nothing. So they're kindly donating a lot of that to us, and we might be able to make a few pounds selling that on our dedicated website. And obviously all that money will go to charity as well.
Brilliant. Yeah, you've got some amazing shirts available to buy on the website. Man United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal, Bayern Munich as well. So lots of cracking teams to buy some shirts from. Just quickly on Football Shirt Friday, which is Friday the 20th of November. That's a national event, I believe, isn't it? Where, like I said, everyone up and down the country would normally go into work or school, etc., and wear their team's colours.
Definitely. And it was due to happen in April, so it has been delayed, and we're really getting right behind it. And Harry Kane and Jordan Nobbs did a fantastic video for this just pre-lockdown, and we can see them changing England shirts a number of times. So you can see that clip on our Twitter feed as well. We want you to get involved on Football Shirt Friday on November the 20th. And if you're not in your workplace, we've set up that page in order that you can still take part and be part of our work, if you like. So a virtual world of Football Shirt Friday Fridays, take a selfie if you wish to and post it to Twitter and at us and hashtag us, and we'll feature you as well. If you don't wish to, but you just wish to take part in your own home and do it your way, then obviously you can absolutely do that, but just donate via our events page as well. So it's at www.footballshirtsfc.co.uk.
Well, we know, Tony, you're a Peterborough United fan, and both Peterborough United and Cambridge, two local sides, are doing very well this season. Hopefully, like I say, the Cambridge fans can get involved. Just lastly then, what's the easiest way for them to now get involved and really make a difference to two brilliant charities by the sounds of things?
Yeah, I think our website is definitely the place to go, really, if you want to sort of find out more about us as an organisation. There's lots of detail on the website about the charities we're supporting, lots more detail than we've had time to discuss here, but everything that's on, everything people could need to know, really, whether it's the desire to buy a shirt or take part in the event or find a contact form for if they wish to donate shirts to us, it's everything is on the website at footballshirtsfc.co.uk, and we're on Twitter, we're at FSFCUK. And that's quite a lively community. The football shirt community is quite a lively place to be. And they're probably the two most obvious places for people to find more detail about us.
Well, Tony, Jamie, thank you very much for coming on the show. Thanks for some amazing work as well. And fingers crossed that those Cambridge United fans, from our point of view, can rocket up that leaderboard and get involved.
Partly why we've spoken to you, Ollie. We're absolutely certain that they will. And that's what we love about our work. We bring together football fans from every club to do good. So, yeah, get involved with us and we look forward to working with you.
And not to forget, it doesn't need to be professional football teams. It could be anybody right down the football pyramid.
There are, hundreds of teams in the Cambridgeshire County Grassroots Leagues that we follow up and down the country. And if they're listening and they'd love to get involved as well, then the more the merrier, I'm sure. Tanya, Jamie, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.